When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
I had written your name and info down, and my favorite thing is, though, I don't even have any clue what you're going to talk about, which is I love that. That's my absolute favorite thing. So
because I started listening to certain shows probably a couple months ago. I started listening to Derek's show, Monsters Among Us.
Uh-huh.
And I started from the beginning, so when he, I think you were on, he was on your show season 2 episode 19. And he said, check you out. So I checked out the, you know, Into the Fray. And ever since then, I started listening to it. I know I'm on only episode 17 of yours from the very beginning, but it gets me through the day.
Well, thank you. That means a whole lot to me. It's always kind of slightly embarrassing, I guess, to me when people start from the beginning, because I feel like those old shows are just... You know, I guess we're all critical of our own work. So to me, I'm like, oh, you're listening to the old ones. I'm like, oh, gosh. Because some people start the opposite direction, right. You know?
Yeah, I started at the beginning. And from the very beginning, I got hooked. The quality, everything to me was great. And that was kind of funny. Ryan, at the beginning, I don't know if he's still doing his recording in the closet. But it's funny, I turned my closet. Our master closet into like my office, so I'm in a closet too.
It works. I mean, it provides a really a lot better sound quality sometimes. You know, you just have to do what you got to do. So yeah. Well, Luis, as I kind of mentioned earlier, I contacted you yesterday, and I said, hey, would you like to come on, because you answered the group questions for Into the Fray on Facebook, and I always ask, just in case, it's my way of going fishing. Just I ask, how did you hear about Into the Fray? And then, do you have any experiences that you'd want to share on the show? And your answer was very simple and to the point. You just said yes. And so that's why I contacted you. And thanks again for coming on last minute with me to record. This is the very next day after I contacted Luis. So that was very cool of him. And I just told him how excited I was, because all I know is, yes, he has experiences, and that he has his own personal experiences, plus... He has some to share from his uncle and grandfather, but other than that, I have no idea what's coming, and that can be sometimes my very favorite recordings. So, Luis, take it away. I don't know where you want to start.
Thank you for having me on the show, and like I said, I have a lot of stories, but one of the main experiences that I had was in 1998, I was in a terrible car accident with my mom and brother, and the last thing I remember before the car accident was my mom screaming, "No, my kids." And I remember taking my seatbelt off to grab her and my brother. The car was flipping, and that's all I remember. And that's the last thing I remember hearing from my mom. At that time, I was 18. My brother was, I think he was 12. And I don't really remember much, but waking up in the hospital the next day, and I guess family was there, and they had said that, I guess when my dad and everybody got the phone call, which was weird because sometimes I do believe in fate. There's two different main roads to go where we have accidents, and for some reason my dad decided to take that road instead of the road that would have been faster where he was going, and unfortunately he pulled up to the scene of what had happened, and I was already care flighted because they said I had flatlined. And, you know, basically they were calling the family because they didn't think I was going to make it with the broken back. I lost a lot of blood. I had a huge cut on the back of my head. And pretty much they said, you know, I wasn't going to make it. And I wake up and then, you know, I just hear the doctors kind of like shouting and they were saying, you know, he's up. And I think they were more astonished that they said, I was moving my feet. And they said, there's no way that I was supposed to be paralyzed from where I broke my back. But they said they saw me moving my feet. And I guess you can say that's a miracle. I was in the hospital for about a month in intensive care. And I think the hardest part of that was I never got to say goodbye to my mom. I think it was a week later we're doing her funeral and everything. And this is where part of my story starts, was that same day that nobody had told me how they were going to do her funeral or who all was going to be there. I just remember later that afternoon, the doctors had told me that at that precise time that I flatlined again. I flatlined at the precise time when her funeral had started. And remember, and mind you, nobody had told me what they were doing or how it was. You know, my background, we're from Mexico, and they do the traditional funeral where it's from the church, they carry the casket to the cemetery, and that's what they did. And I was actually, when I had a flatline, I was actually there at the funeral, and I was able to tell you what shirt my dad was wearing, my brother, how they had left an empty chair for me. How I saw all my family carrying my mom, her casket, pretty much to the end when they ended up, you know, putting her in the ground and saying goodbye. You know, it was like I was there. And nobody had told me. And then when my dad and family came later that afternoon to see me, they told them, the doctors told me, your son had flatlined at this time. And that's when I found out that's the time that the funeral was happening. And I asked my dad, I said, hey, were you wearing this? Was there an empty chair for me there? My uncles, you know, all my uncles from Mexico came. Did y'all walk her like this? And he said, yes. He goes, but who told you? I said, nobody told me. I said, I was there. And that's one of the things that just, you know, got me to believe that there's so much in this world that we don't know.
Well, first, I'm so sorry about your mom. Did she die at the scene of the accident?
She had a heart attack instantly, even though she had that, you know, she had injuries, but it was due to a heart attack instantly.
Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry, Luis. I mean, what did your dad say about that when he's starting to put together the fact that you saw the empty chair, you knew what people were wearing, and that you flatlined at the exact same time the funeral started? What did he say to that?
He was just like in shock and awe. He was like, but how do you know? Who did somebody tell you? I was like, no, because pretty much everybody was at the funeral. I was there by myself at the hospital, just with, you know, the doctors and the staff. And he just, you know, he shed a tear, and he just said, well, you know, I guess somehow maybe your mom or somehow you were able to actually say your goodbye or be there to see it, because that was, to this day, so it's one of the, yes, losing my mom was the hardest thing ever, but not to be able to be there and say goodbye was, I think, was, would have been really painful. But since I got that experience, it's just, it's unexplainable, you know, what caused me. I know I flatlined, and I do believe that, you know, astral projections and my spirit left, or, you know, my body, and I was able to be there.
So what did that mean to you, as far as basically you were able to be there when, in essence, you were stuck in the hospital? You had no way of going to that funeral. What did that mean to you to actually, in a way, be there?
It meant the world to me that no matter what you encounter, what hardships, that eventually life finds a way. Kind of quoting like Jurassic Park, life found a way. Life finds a way.
Right. That is really a cool story. What about the first time that you flatlined? Did anything strange happen that first time, or it was just that second time? Then you basically, like you said, you don't know what else to call it, astral projected to your mom's funeral. Did anything happen that first round?
Well, the first time that I remember, as I sat back and my brother was explaining to me, he said he pulled me out of the car and, you know, helped me get under this bridge, you know, for safety. And I just remember being at peace, you know how they always say, oh, you always see this light. It just seemed peaceful. I was not in pain. It was just almost like if I was just sleeping and dreaming. Like my mom was there and I was there, and then it just, like, in an instant, like, everything just came flashing right back, and I woke up. And that's when my brother said that I looked at him, and he said, you're okay, you know, help's on the way. So I'm guessing at that time, that's, you know, when you see on TV and the movies and everything, how your spirit just flat runs right back into your body. That's what it felt like. And, you know, I had broken bones and everything, but I felt no pain. So that could have been because of the shock and everything, but it you know, and my brother, you know, what he did was he dragged me out of the car and he said he was talking to me, but I just was not there, you know. And then he said, all of a sudden I just came to, and after that, I really don't remember anything. I slightly remember the helicopter crew getting me, and then I do think I flatlined again on that helicopter. So I think I flatlined a total of 3 times through that whole experience.
You said something interesting. You said that first time when your brother had pulled you out of the car, you weren't, you know, conscious as far as you know, and that your mom was there. Can you describe that a little bit more, what you mean by that?
It just felt like I was there with my mom, but it wasn't really my mom as I knew her there, the who I just saw. It was almost like a version of my mom younger. And it just felt peaceful. It just felt real peaceful.
It's almost like, I mean, obviously you guys had a really strong connection, you and your mother, and you said she died instantly.
Instantly.
So it's like you kind of went with her, like just another way to say goodbye.
Yeah, it almost felt that way, but even though I saw that and I experienced the funeral, I still had a big piece inside of me that I really didn't get to say goodbye to her. And, but there was a couple months, I think it was a month after, when I was back home. This is where, I guess, the best part of my story happens. They had released me. I was back home. It was a month later. You know, I was sad. It was hard being back at home, knowing that she wasn't there. I was always expecting to hear a knock on the door, you know, telling me, hey, wake up. Because I used to take her to work every day. And I pretty much did everything for my mom. I helped her with everything, and we were close. It was a month later, I was having this fear sleeping in my room, it was almost a fear. Like I could see, it was like it was her ghost. Somebody just, it just looked like, it didn't look like her face. It just looked like it was a shiny white figure who would come see me, but I felt terrified. Even though in my mind I was saying, okay, this is my mom, but why am I scared? It was like, I'm scared to open my eyes and see what's there. But it felt, it's like, am I could feel like it was touching me and telling me it was okay, but I was so scared to wake up and look. And I've, you know, researched and heard about, you know, how other people talked about the, is it the paralysis, where, you know, nightmare paralysis. It, I don't know if that was it, but knowing that it was someone who I loved, why was I afraid of it? Why was I scared to see it? And it wasn't until that happened for about a month, every night I would get that feeling. And then one day I just said, I told myself, well, I shouldn't be afraid. If it is my mom, it's my mom. And that night that I decided, you know, I shouldn't be, don't be afraid. I didn't have that feeling, but I had a dream, but it felt so real that I was back in my high school, and one of my best friends, who sadly passed away a year after this incident, he was one of the only ones that came. He stayed with me at the hospital. I was back in my cafeteria. I was in high school, and he came up to me and said, hey, you need to go stand in the lunch line. There's someone there. You need to go to this line. I was like, well, okay, okay. And he was like, tell me, hey, come on, Luis, you know, hurry up, hurry up. So I go stand in line, and I'm seeing people that I know from school. But when I get to where I'm going to get my tray, the person serving the food was my mom. And it was my mom, as I remembered her from the last day that I saw her. And she actually hugged me and told me that everything was fine, that she loved me. And at this time, I think my dad had woken up because he heard me, you know, kind of moving around, and he said he saw tears on my face, and he just felt a glow in the room, and that, to me, was my mom actually coming back, able to say, you know, goodbye, and that everything was fine.
So there was actually a glow in the room that your dad saw. Did he describe that any more than just the glow in the room?
He just thought it was like a light. Like a night light, but there was no night light down there. And then he just said it was kind of, it was as quick as he saw it, it was there. And then it just kind of faded away. But he said he saw, you know, tears on my eyes. And then, you know, he woke me up and I told him what I had just seen or experienced. And, he, you know, he said, well, I'm glad that happened, that you were able to say goodbye to your mom.
It's interesting about the friend telling you, no, no, you need to go to this particular line. Like, if you hadn't have listened and fought that, you know what I mean? I wonder how, yeah. if that was your one and only chance to do that, you know, if the next night you would have had another chance, maybe it would have been a different scenario, or if that was it and you did it right.
Yeah, because leading up to that night, I was always terrified to open my eyes at night because I felt her ghost was there, and I was like, why am I scared of her ghost? This is my mother.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see why I should be afraid. And it's when I had that dream that my friend, you know, he came and he told me, that, hey, you need to go over here. Come this way. Somebody's, like, waiting there. You need to go this way. I was like, okay, because I think in my dream I thought it was going to go, but he kind of insisted. And the funny thing is the last time I saw my best friend and my mom together was the 4th of July, and she didn't speak much English, and he really didn't speak Spanish, but just seeing them together, you know, talking and getting fireworks ready, just something about that moment seemed to me like, okay, this was the bond that they created, because I said a year later, he passed away in a car accident too. And see, with him, which is, I guess, fate again, because we used to pass each other every day. I was going to work, he was going to college. And every day we'd pass each other at the same time and always give a thumbs up, like, hey, I'll see you later. But this time it was almost like I passed them by, and we could always see each other pass by. It was like he just waved goodbye. And later on that day, a couple hours out, I called to see if he was home, and his grandmother told me he had passed away in a car accident.
Oh, goodness. that's a lot of tragedy, all in a very short amount of time, huh?
Yeah, it is. And I think by them, you know, me being able to say goodbye to them and all that has helped me know that no matter what happens, life continues and just makes you stronger. And it helps you believe in things that most people probably won't believe.
Do you think there's something in, as far as a tie-in, with the fact that you were really scared in the beginning with this shiny white figure, you know, and you didn't want to open your eyes and it scared you for quite a while before you had the dream with your best friend and your mom and you felt like you got to say goodbye? Do you think there's something in the fear that you needed to get past to have that final experience? Or do you think that those are separate somehow?
I think it all tied in together for me to get over that fear, to almost like something is right behind the door. And if you're scared to open the door, you're never going to get what's there waiting for you to feel complete or to accomplish something that you're looking for. Now, there's always obstacles. And if you don't overcome those obstacles, you'll never get to the point you want to get.
So essentially getting over the fear, you were handed the key.
Yes. And I was able to say goodbye and experience, you know, her tell me everything's fine. I'm okay. And, you know, take care, you know, pretty much just take care of everyone. And I'm okay. That I'm happy. It's not your fault. You know, and it's hard because I know, I don't think if I would have had that experience, I probably would have felt guilty the rest of my life. Like it was my fault or I should have done something better. It's always that should have. Mm-hmm. And I think her and me overcoming that fear, and as overcoming that fear is also, you know, telling yourself it wasn't your fault. It was an accident. I was able to get the key and see the result saying, hey, it's okay.
So you were driving, she was in the passenger seat, and then your brother was in the back seat?
No, she was in the back seat. My brother was in the passenger.
Okay. So, but that does make a whole lot of sense, right, as far as the guilt side of things, because you were the driver. So regardless if it was your fault straight out of the gate, or if you just felt like, oh, I could have braked sooner because the guy, whatever the situation was, ran a light or whatever it was, you were driving, mm-hmm. So you felt like it was your fault.
Yeah, and it's a road that we pass every single day. The road was in bad condition, so that was the cause of the accident. Mm-hmm. And you know, passing that every single day until I was able to have that experience and say goodbye kind of took a lot of pressure off of me. And you know, kind of one of the reasons too that, you know, I'm in Florida and not in Texas, because this happened in Texas, is I knew my mom was at rest, and, you know, I just felt better being away, mm-hmm. and not, because I feel that she's with me everywhere. It's like every time I'm in a store or something, it's like I get a glimpse of her. You know, everybody says they have their doppelgangers or there's always someone. It just, to me, you know, it always seems like I see a glimpse of somebody that resembles my mom, and I just smile and say, okay, I know you're still somewhere there looking out.
So did you have any other dreams or see anything else kind of off in your room during the day before you went to sleep, anything like that? Or was that kind of the culmination of that whole scenario?
Yeah, after that I was able to say goodbye, it all stopped. Mm. I didn't have the fear at night anymore, or, you know, even going to the cemetery at night to see her, I can do that now. That fear is gone. But those dreams and all that stopped. It just, I don't think till this day I haven't had a dream of being with her. It's like, it's understandable. You know, she's gone, you know, in a better place. I had closure.
That's really pretty powerful, right? To have all that stuff lead up to that final meeting for you two. led on by your best friend, right? And then now you don't you don't see her because she said, I'm fine now, and you don't need to feel bad.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, you think, oh, I wish I could see her every day. It's the understanding, like, she's not here, but she's in your memories and she's in your heart, but she's okay. You don't have to, you know, feel guilty the rest of your life. Like, she gave me that, it's okay, continue your life. And I know it's hard for some people who lose people like that in accidents and they never get that closure. And, you know, I wish anybody who's going through anything like that, I've always wondered, has anybody else experienced this? You know, and I hope that they can get that kind of closure as well.
Yeah, I could see where, you know, a lot of times I think that, you know, we're going about our lives, it's busy, and, you know, especially in a year like 2020, where there's all these other things going on, it's probably pretty easy for a lot of people to maybe ignore some of those types of signs, right? Or just to pass it off as something else. But it's cool because you really were able to follow the threads that it seems like she was trying to leave you. And even though at the beginning, especially when you were scared of what you were seeing in your bedroom, which who wouldn't be? It was cool. You were able to fight through that and get to where she wanted you to be. And that was to say goodbye and have that closure.
Yeah. And I kind of always knew I was going to have to do that because growing up, you know, Mexican folklore and everything, my mom telling me stories when she was growing up from my uncles and my grandpa, and just the belief of the supernatural. I know it does exist. It's out there. A lot of times it's not like what the movies are, but there's a lot of, you know, stuff out there that remembered what she had told me as I was growing up is what kind of also gave me the strength to overcome the fear.
Boy, that, thanks for sharing that. That was really cool. I don't know what I was expecting, but that, I mean, I've had losses of my own, so it's always really cool to hear stories like that because I am definitely of the mindset there are a lot of things out there that we don't understand. And but I also think that the connection that you two shared also helped you guys get to that point where you could have closure for a tragedy like that.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm thankful for that. And yeah. Like I said, I've always wondered and done research and stuff, is like, has anybody else had this experience? You know, a lot of times, you know, people say they daydream, but like when I daydream, it's not like a daydream. It's almost like I think, what is the world doing? What is this person doing? Where's this person going home to? It's almost like I can just see the world as a whole, and just almost like if, you know, if we're all in some kind of simulation, and then one day you just wake up and it was all a simulation. To think that we're alone in this world or we're not, that's what would really scare me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that would be really sad if we go on the ground and we're just worm food and that's it. It's over. It's done. That would be extremely depressing to think like that.
Yeah, I think we have a greater purpose that maybe we haven't gotten to that point, but I think eventually everyone will. And it's awesome because I think that's what life is.
Well, what other stories would you like to share with us, Luis?
Oh, like the stories like my mom would tell me growing up. When it comes to my uncles, they were in Mexico. They lived kind of out in the mountains. It's real remote. And growing up, my mom would tell me how, you know, my uncles were sometimes, you know, mischievous and all that. My grandma would tell them that, if, you know, if you don't behave and you're bad, what they call in Mexico is a duende. It's, I guess, like a dwarf or a evil elf, something like that, that when you're a kid and you behave, they'll come find you or they would take you away. And she told, my mom told me a story about my uncle that he was being bad. And from him to get from one town to the other town, he'd have to cross, like, you know, through the woods and a little hill. And on that hill, there was a ladder that you would have to climb up to get over to the other side of the hill. And at that particular day, when he crossed it, he saw, I guess, it had taken the shape of a little kid. And my uncle wasn't being followed. He was kind of out in the middle. There was nobody else around at the time. It was during the day. And it scared him, so he decided to walk, climb back over the hill. And the little kid was there again and continued to follow him. So I guess my uncle got scared and he was running back home and he turned around and it was gone. And my mom told me, my grandma told me that that was a duende that was, you know, following him for not behaving.
Well, was there any other details as far as what this little kid looked like?
He said that it was almost like identical to him, dressed the same way, almost like if he was looking into a mirror.
Oh, that's even actually maybe more creepy, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've heard stories that, you know, they can take shape of certain things and certain different things of what these duendes do. Like they make deals with their parents or they try to kidnap the kids or something. But, you know, her story was told my uncle, if you misbehave, if you're bad, they're going to come and take you away. And yeah, he said that my mom said that it was what scared him the most was it looked like he was just looking in a mirror, identical to the same clothes, what he was wearing, everything. That's what really scared him the most. Because I think the way my uncles were, they probably weren't afraid if they would have seen something scary looking. You know, they had that tough mentality when they were kids back then. But seeing something exactly like him, I think that's what scared him. You know, it was identical to him.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he would go over the hill, it was right there. I think he did it like 3 or 4 times, and he was always there waiting for him.
Oh my goodness. So was he not supposed to be going over this hill? Like, is that the lesson of the story? Is he was going somewhere he wasn't supposed to be going ever?
I think because he was misbehaving that day, and he wanted to go somewhere to the next town and play, and they had told him no, and he didn't listen, and he went anyways. And to get to that town, you had to cross that hill. Almost like a bridge, but it was a hill. And I'm thinking that's what caused that to happen, because he ran back after he saw that. He ran back home.
Oh my goodness. And to see that thing several times, did he tell his parents and, you know, your mom, his sisters and brothers, every time he saw it, would he go home and say something?
Yeah. And the funny thing is whenever he misbehaved is when it would happen. And I think my mom said it happened maybe 4 or 5 times when he started listening, and it kind of, when that happened, it stopped.
The duende did its job, huh?
Yeah.
Did anybody else ever see it? Like, was anybody else misbehaving with him, and then they would go with him to this hill and see the duende?
No, that's the thing. It only seems like the duende only appears to one person or something like that. I mean, he had other friends who said they had the same experiences, but never together.
Gosh, that would be really creepy to be with even just one other person. And since you were the one misbehaving, you would see it. But this person right next to you, you're going, do you see that little thing? Of course, it looks like you, so which is all the more messed up. And then they go, no, right. No, man, what are you talking about? That would be horrifying. Not, I mean, it's horrifying enough in and of itself, but is so interesting that only the person then really meant to see it is the only one that's going to see it.
Yeah, because that's kind of how, what, you know, the mothers would tell their children, you know, if you misbehave, this one isn't going to come for you. Mm. And I guess it makes it more scary to see. You're probably thinking it's a little monster or something scary, but it's more terrifying. You're seeing the exact copy of you.
Was it about the same exact size as he was at that age?
From what my mom said, it was exactly like him.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, just a little kid, you know, same height, size, everything.
Yeah, that's messed up. Oh, gosh.
And, you know, me, when she had told me the story, you know, I was like 12 and 13, and we had gone there, and, you know, out of curiosity, I didn't want to be bad, but I wanted to see if I could experience or see something like that. And she was like, you know, you really don't want to go through that. So you can ask your uncle. And I asked him, he said, yeah, it scared me. He goes, ever since after that, you know, he was like, I was rebellious for a little while, but, you know, he stopped after a while. He just said, no, I couldn't do it. It was scary.
That straightened him out.
Yeah.
That's cool that he had no problem talking about this years and years later. I love that about, you know, cultural stories and family stories, people that are actually open to talking about that stuff. So he had no problem bringing that up ever.
Yeah, he had no problem. It was kind of like, hey, don't do what I did, because this really does exist.
Oh.
It really happened.
Did you ever ask him what he thought that actually was? Like, what kind of entity? Like, was there a label he could really put on it as far as breaking it further down from, you know, what you might call it in Mexico, Duende, evil elf? But what does he actually think it is, really?
He just kind of, you know, from the aunts and uncles and everything that, you know, growing up, their folklore, to them, everything always ended up being the devil.
Being what? I didn't catch that last word. I'm sorry.
Everything bad that ever happened was the devil.
The devil. Okay. Yeah, sorry. I didn't catch that last word. Okay. So just some form. Is the devil just taking another form, basically?
Basically to them that, even though they know that, yeah, these blenders exist, there's good, you know, witches exist. It was just, you know, so much that existed down there that they said it all kind of went down to the devil. Now, they had told me, yeah, there was good witches that were like witch doctors, and when you were sick or something, they would help you feel better or do little, like, supposedly what they said were spells, herbs and stuff like that to cure you when you got sick or scared or something like that. But all the evil stuff, they always said, you know, this is the devil's work, you know, his thing.
So even the idea of, you know, Bruja, like, I assume Bruja is normally a bad witch there, right? That would not be a good witch doing, like, white spells or healing people. Bruja is like a bad witch. So that also would fall under the umbrella of the devil.
Yeah, I think the word for it, like, a good witch would be a curandera or curandero. Like a healer. But they would still associate saying that the healers had the mystical kind of magic or whatever that was into that same realm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just that they were good, that they knew how to be bad, but they were good. And they called them, you know, healers, curanderas or curanderos.
So they just chose to be good, but they had it in them to be quite evil if they wanted to.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, Luis, again, I cannot say thank you enough for hopping on last minute like this. And I love, love, love your stories. I think it's the only time I've not even asked for just a quick outline, you know, because sometimes I'll like to have little segue points or whatever to lead the conversation. So this is the first time I just totally put you in charge, and it turned out awesome. And I thank you so much. And honestly, if anything else, you know, comes up or any other weirdness, get in touch. I'd love to chat with you again.
Oh, awesome. Thank you for having me on the show. And of course, like I said, I feel like we're just magnets for this stuff to happen. So I'm sure something will come up or something will happen. And, you know, definitely let you know.
Thanks, Luis. Well, you have a good day out there in beautiful and sunny Florida.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
Thanks, Luis. Bye-bye.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little biography. Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes. Consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are.
people suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you'll be reincarnated. If you are liberated from others now that you're not, the past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it this way. He said, spring does not become the summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Terms and conditions apply.